Today on the Cooligans, I am joined by guest co-host Kyle Martino. You've heard him calling matches for the U.S. men's national team and the women's national team. We'll talk about the upcoming friendlies. Mauricio Pochettino, the new head coach, we'll get his thoughts on it. And we talk some Champions League and Messi winning Supporter Shield. Is the Supporter Shield more significant than MLS Cup? We talk all about it today on the Cooligans. I am absolutely delighted today to be joined by my guest co-host. And I just want to make sure I show him all the love in the world and appreciation for... I cannot believe Kyle Martino is here doing this. Kyle Martino, why are you here, bro?
Oh, you guys have buttons. That's what I'm here for. The fake applause.
Feel free to use these. You are guest hosting. Alexis is usually the person that is smashing on some of these buttons.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Oh, my God. I feel like Daft Punk. I'm gonna get into that.
But Kyle Martino is guest hosting with me today because Alexis is in the UK.
Yeah, just world traveler. Mm-hmm. Just flying around.
What a life.
Want to come back as Alexis, that's for sure. Lifetime goals.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, just the medical bills are going to be crazy. so I better be prepared for that. But I want to start the show just by obviously saying thank you. But also, We were talking about your hair. Your hair is a big part of, I think, just Kyle Martino lore, Kyle Martino canon. Everybody appreciates, especially when they were watching you on NBC doing Premier League coverage for years.
Whether they were appreciating it or not, yeah. The hair has been...
The hair has been a thing this is how I know...
I love when you talk to it. That's my favorite part is when you just...
I was...
You're not even looking at me anymore.
He's like, my eyes are down here, buddy. I 100%...
And yes, it's real.
I 100% was doing that. But I know there's something that happens, I think, in media in general... especially when men have nice hair or the people appreciate the way it's styled, it's always what product do you use for your hair? It's like to me a very derivative question. I'm like, how many times are you gonna ask a dude what kind of how much product?
I swear to God, my answer is it's kind of like in coming to America, you know, like we're like, oh, it's fruits and berries, like there's nothing in it. And so I, you know, every now and then if I'm on set, the incredible makeup people will throw a little,
you know, put
a little bit of the, you know, with fiber or whatever. This is natural fiber that probably is, as a result of probably going 3 days too long without washing it. It just gets that natural, hold. It's got that natural hold.
That's the thing. I wasn't even interested in your answer. I was just talking about how you get asked the question so much. That is something that is inherent to people liking your hair. So yeah. I just find it an interesting aspect of that. But I want to just go through we were talking about it. I'm like, let's just Google Kyle Martino hair and haircuts and the journey that you've been through. And this is mainly in your media career.
This is you guys.
This was a funny, a wild moment. This was at
oh my
at
gosh, this was during the pandemic.
Height of the pandemic. Alexis had gone on Instagram Live with you to give yourself a haircut. And Alexis was like your virtual barber.
He was my mirror so that I could make sure I got the lines right.
Yeah. That's, give a proper fade. Yeah.
Yeah. And it turns out delays and buffering.
Yeah, dude.
Does not give you a clean line in the
back. Then look, we're looking at this hairstyle here. I mean, this is just a big, there's been a evolution. De-evolution, I don't know what.
I don't even know. I don't know where it's progressing towards.
It's gone everywhere. And then this one, without the...
That looks like a helmet.
Without the grays. Yeah, it almost looks like you... I mean, I'm not... You know, it doesn't look like you're coloring your hair here, but there's something about your natural hair color in this picture that looks like you are trying to hide the grays.
Yeah, I mean, it's just very clear how stressful the last... What's the date on that? The last 8 years of my... Oh, run for president. The last, 8 years of my life.
Nice pompadour. Oh, I mean, it's been a lot. No, it's...
You know what's funny? I remember at one point there was a Twitter account. I don't know if it still exists because I'm not on Twitter. That was a hair parody I think it was just Kyle Martino's hair.
Okay.
And it was whoever was behind it, I just want to say thank you because it did make me laugh a lot. It was really, really good. We'll have to track that down at some point.
I'll see if it pops up or whatever. But Kyle Martino hair. Yeah. The account is no longer active, but it looks like, it looks like it was
my hair retired
at one point. But Kyle Martino, thank you so much for joining me. We got a lot to go over today. We're obviously going to talk about the USMNT call-ups.
Yeah.
Kyle Martino is one of the announcers.
I was about to say, I'm not one of the call-ups.
Imagine you're back on, God, buddy.
I'd leave my phone. I'd be like...
we have to go over that, the upcoming friendlies, because Mauricio Pochettino will be coaching for the first time, and Kyle Martino is one of the announcers for TNT and covering the U.S. men and women's national teams. We're gonna start with Champions League though, and just a quick little recap of all those games, and we'll start with Arsenal against PSG.
Cause yeah, we will.
It seems like. No matter, I usually have a few folks that I ask to guest host whenever Alexis is unavailable.
Yeah, I see I was way down the list.
Terribly, yeah. It's really,
got a lot of no's.
It's mostly, there's no way Kyle's going to agree to do this. that's really where you are on the list. So thank you. But it seems like no matter who I ask to guest host this show, they are also an Arsenal fan.
Oh, really?
I can't find somebody who's qualified to sit in that seat that is not an Arsenal fan, respectfully to anybody of these other teams.
We're by far the greatest team the world has ever seen.
And our producer, Carter.
You know, you got to get next to Spike. Get Spike Lee. He's been thrown down in Brooklyn. No invite. Have you gotten an invite to any of that yet?
Of course, are you on out of your mind? You think I'm going to get an invite if you haven't?
We got to get into that Spike Lee Gooner.
Did you see
get together?
Did you see Spike yelling at, who's the girl from the Aces? The point guard.
Kelsey Plum.
He was on the bench, like.
Well, he was courtside?
He was courtside bantering with Kelsey Plum.
No way.
Similar the way he does it,
too. Listen, nothing says equality more than that, because he's been doing that for 30 years to every single NBA player.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah, so it's like.
I love it. She was kind of jarring.
That's the Spike Lee treatment.
Jarring back and forth with him. It was great.
I love that.
And our producer Carter is a big Tottenham supporter. So, I'm sorry if I've derailed
the show.
Come
on, you Spurs, right? Baby.
Thanks, everyone. This has been great.
Derailed the show. But Arsenal, obviously back in Champions League and playing against PSG. And this, my early thoughts in this game, even before the game kicked off, I'm like, what is PSG right now without Mbappe? No Dembele, because he was benched for some sort of, I don't know, Luis Enrique wasn't clear, but like some disciplinary thing. But I don't, at some point, you got to be like, this is Champions League. We'll bench him the next game. Like, let it go, dude.
Yeah. you also kind of can't afford that at this this point.
It's a little arrogant. Dembele's their best player, and for him to not be a part of this game, I just felt like PSG, even with Dembele, I didn't think PSG could win this game. They without Mbappe, that clear sort of distinction of the fact that. Yeah, they win in France all the time because it's PSG and they're clearly the best team. But the gap from that to Champions League is a little too high. And I felt like, it was a 2-0 win, but I felt like there's no way PSG at the very least is winning this game.
Yeah, well, although you say, without Mbappe, I'm sure there's Real Madrid fans right now that would be like, yeah, didn't work for us.
Sure. He didn't start the game, that Champions League game, right?
He
didn't start yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. We'll double check. But the... It's a PSG. Seemingly,
you're spending a lot of time on PSG. Can we not start with
sure?
Can it not just be Arsenal?
Arsenal
are legit.
It's impressive as well without Odegaard.
Yeah,
because they're finding ways to. It's not even about the production or like the goals and assists that Odegaard bring, but there's a control of matches I've said this for the last 2 years. I'm like, Odegaard is one of my favorite players to watch in the Premier League because he has a style of just dribbling, of moving his hips in a certain direction where you really don't know what his next move is going to be. And he's always finding ways incredible. To make key passes.
You know what it feels like? It feels like literally game, someone's yeah. at home. Like, dude, this guy is just the best to play with.
Yeah, he moves like a video game character.
I'll tell you what it is. And I love Odegaard. I mean, this could be a 7-hour podcast. Sure. Just a Odegaard love-in. It's called executive function, which is one piece of his game that is fascinating. And I'll unpack that. Sure. Now this is turning into a science show. There was a study done about the Barcelona team at one point, and they grabbed Xavi and Iniesta, and they looked into, is there something different going on in their brains? That, forget skill. Skill is essential, right? Collecting a ball, preparing it, passing it, you know, it's like, yeah, you have to have those qualities, but a lot of people can demonstrate those qualities in a vacuum, and you can measure that. You know, combine style, you can see if someone has those qualities. But in soccer, the number one differentiator, the greatest thing that tells you if someone is good or great, is decision making. And executive function is your ability to take in all this information. You know, that we always do these look over your shoulder, you know, breakdowns. Watch how many times they looked over their shoulders. It's like, yeah, any idiot could look over their shoulders a bunch of times. It's what do you do with that information? Mm-hmm. And what do you do with the world that you just created in your head and took a picture of when you get a ball in a very difficult scenario? And how do you pick the right thing to do, whether it's take another touch, whether it's pass it, whether it's not even touch the ball and let it roll? And Xavi is one of the greatest players. If you want to watch this at home and the kids that are home, like, Xavi is one of the greatest players ever to demonstrate this executive function. And Odegaard is a little nastier than Xavi, right? He's got a little something as well, which Xavi just didn't bring that to his game. He didn't need to. So I'd say, like, Iniesta and Odegaard, to me, feel like similar players. And Odegaard, it's just to be the conductor, to be the balance, to be the calm, but also to be the nasty every now and then. Like, I love that.
I compare a little to what, like, when you see a white guy that can really dance, like, really well, you're like, bro, this
you,
is...
You see me here.
You invited to the quince, to the cookout. Like, he gets a pass. There's something about him that...
Give him a chance. Just give him a chance. Put it on. Put that track on.
I love it. And it's just because, especially, I love players that get out of difficult positions. Like, just get out of, like, there's two defenders. How did you... maybe pop the ball over a leg or whatever, like when it just seems like it's a tight space that there's no way they're going to get out of it. And Odegaard is sort of the, like, I find to be the best right now at that.
And also young, obviously, where, you know, not Real Madrid young, where he's phenomenon, you know, like he was just this young kid. Oh my God, this kid's going to be the best thing ever. But Cesc Fabregas, I remember when he came to Arsenal, you know, wearing the armband, like having this level of responsibility and all that too. It's amazing. So going back to PSG, we did this without him.
Yeah. That's what
now we need him. Desperately. This isn't a we could do it without him.
Yeah, there's a, like, what's sort of happening right now with the current lineup. I want to credit Calafiori as well, because I think he's been an interesting addition to this team, where he's, like, clearly a center back. Mm. We sort of know that. We saw him at Bologna. And now he's, like, he's played right back, he's played left back, he's, like, kind of everywhere. And he's fitting into this team so perfectly. It's, like, credit to the scouts to just understand, like, the center back pairing between Gabriel Magalhães and Saliba, that's not changing. There's no way.
That's locked in.
That's clearly the best, arguably the best center back pairing in the Premier League.
That's Pippen Jordan style.
Yeah. And so for them to just, like, figure out different ways to find goals and to create chances is really impressive, because there's a lot of pressure on Declan Rice and Thomas Partey. And just throughout this game, like, the goal, Havertz scored the goal, the header. Mm-hmm. Who passed the ball? I think it was Trossard.
Dime of a ball.
It was Trossard, who was kind of playing high center too. That, like, false nine, Havertz kind of rolling through. It's also, Havertz was getting a lot of let's be honest, for a while, about not being able to do enough. And does Arsenal really have a nine? And is the system going to work this way? And so, testament to Arteta, by the way, for staying firm on that. And then another thing that everyone made fun of. I remember when Liverpool hired a throw-ins coach and everyone made fun of them. It's like,
right.
Set pieces, man. You know, I feel like I'm like Alexi Lalas, like set pieces. But like set pieces, it's incredible. And you go back and watch all these, and it's not the crazy, like overly elaborate play it here, you know, pretend like you're a statue and go nuts. It's just, if you go back and watch the video about simply like setting picks in the right area, sure, and just good movement and sequences that create the type of obstruction you never get called for, it's quite remarkable. That stuff's working.
Yeah, it's odd that anybody would sort of poo-poo a set-piece coach or a throw-ins coach. Or like, everybody's trying to find any... Like the margins are so small nowadays, yeah, that, yeah, these are the kind of things that make a difference.
It's not odd that there are people that want to poo-poo something. They're literally just sitting out there going,
I just in this business. Been
mad or angry at something in like 2 seconds. Now it's set pieces.
No. So look, a big win. I did see a comment from Kai Havertz who said they were asking him about Champions League. And he said that it was fun. He said it was nice to win Champions League with Chelsea, but he said it would mean more to win with Arsenal.
Done. Which, well done. Who wrote that? I mean, that is so well crafted.
It's so like, I mean, you get people, you know, your fan base on your side, but all right. You did win one with Chelsea. Like, I mean, yeah, it's like, all right, we don't have to throw them under the bus necessarily. Like, all right, whatever. That was my thought. But yeah, this is who mentioned this about was it you, Carter, that just mentioned about Thierry Henry's comments about Arsenal? Yeah, we were talking about this beforehand, and he basically said that when Arsenal can do this away, when win games like this away, that will be sort of the determining factor whether they can actually win Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, it's like Thierry knows.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's like you kind of just start by going by that. Yeah. But in reality, also with this new format, right, it's like this is going to be fascinating because, you know, some of these matchups that might not happen as this early in the competition, you know, you're going to start to see these teams challenged in that way. And so it's like, yeah, down the stretch, of course, you can't. And then it moves out of that league, you know, table format back into the old knockout stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's still true, but even more true what Thierry's saying, and that you got to prove you can do that. And you'll get more opportunities in this new format to test yourself and do so. So it's like, yeah, we're going to see a lot of this, like big matchups that you see later on in tournaments that happen where you see like, yeah, what is Arsenal capable of going in Burnabout, going in,
totally,
you know, I
think the interesting thing about this format, and now after we've had 3 match days, I think the interesting thing is,
you liking it?
The one thing that's interesting is there's no, you can't strategize as much because you're not playing this team twice, you know what I mean, in your group. So there's a little bit of like, I think it's a little bit more hectic, a little bit more unpredictable, like any given match, because you don't have as much time to prepare for, you will have not have.
They've turned it into Copa America.
Yeah. So like,
it's hectic.
And it kind of speaks to the next game we're going to talk about, which is RB Leipzig and Juventus. A game where you would probably favor Juve, but like RB Leipzig's at home and, you know, everybody sort of has that, the bias of like, which league is better? And some people would favor Serie A over Bundesliga. But this game where a red card is given to the goalkeeper for using his hand on the ball.
Can't do that outside the box.
Outside the box. Turns out. He knows the rules to the sport. I don't know why he did that. But he is sent off. They are down a player. And they end up winning the game regardless.
How many minutes did they play down a man again?
A lot. The red card was in the 59th minute, so 35, 40 minutes.
That's a lifetime.
And it's your goalkeeper, right?
Yeah.
So there's a big,
Where's Mike McGee when you need him? Yeah. Chuck him in goal.
So, but the comeback from Juve was stunning. And also, I mean, humiliating for RB Leipzig to
that one stinks.
To lose this game.
You don't go to the grocery store that week.
Okay,
that's brutal.
But I want to give some credit here to the midfielder for Juventus, Weston McKennie.
Oh yeah,
Weston You know, Vlahovic got the game time goal in a beautiful curler from outside the box, and you sort of expect, you know, that what he's capable of.
Yeah.
But Weston McKennie winning the ball back late in the game.
Yeah, that was like a 50 yard full sprint late in the game.
And you know,
track back.
Have you seen Captain John McKennie on Twitter? You're not on Twitter anymore.
No.
But his father.
My hair isn't there. Turns out.
Your hair.
My whole anatomy is just not on Twitter.
There's no
anymore.
Body part of yours that is on Twitter. Maybe that's a good thing. Okay.
I really hope that there's no body parts.
Okay. Nobody start any other Kyle Twitter
Martino's
accounts.
Earring was there at one point. Even the extension of my anatomy was on there.
No appendages. No. For Kyle Martino's.
Please.
But the Captain John McKennie, Weston's dad, is very active on Twitter. And he defends his son with other like Twitter trolls.
He argues
with people. But it's not, it's never
is
too.
Because right away, I'm like, this can't be a good
it's
thing.
It's not
is
cringy.
It?
He does it. I mean, you know, he's a military man.
Yeah.
He talks about
don't
it.
Don't want that in real life.
He talks about his son in a like, you know, don't doubt him. He's not like, don't be mean to my son. He's not like that. He's like, you see what he's done. He believed in himself. Yep. And whenever he does
it, it's just character witness stuff.
Totally. Whenever there's maybe even Italian media or somebody, he'll like retweet it, quote tweet it, and give his perspective. So he has an audience, a fan base, you know, a security guard sort of on the internet.
In my era, this was when my mom would go on like big soccer board, you know, go on like big soccer boards.
Yeah.
And I remember one time her calling me and being like, Kyle, we have to talk about something. I'm like, oh, what is this? She was like, I was on big soccer. And I was like, Mom, I told you not to go on big soccer. And she was like, someone was talking about, there were a bunch of crew players that went to a Dave Matthews Band concert and they were smoking the weed. And I was like, Mom, first off, don't read this stuff. And secondly, it wasn't me. And she was like, you sure? Yeah, I just want to make sure, like, is everything okay? And I'm like, Mom, I was out of the country. And you know that, playing for the national team.
Mom is
and like, missed that amazing Dave Matthews Band concert.
Mom is like, Dave Matthews is a gateway into drugs. Kyle,
Dave
stay
Matthews
away from
is
it.
The devil.
Stay away from him. Okay, the songs are real sweet.
So yeah,
and I'm romantic, but he'll get you into trouble.
So it's different in this
different.
World. They jump
I love
on
it.
Twitter.
Yeah, big
soccer has
come up. Big soccer has come up a little bit on the show because we had.
Is that still there?
It is still there. It's not as active, obviously. But do you remember? You know, Sean Francis.
Yeah, of course I do.
Sean, he was a big contributor.
Asbury
on big
Park.
Asbury Park FC.
Yeah, shout out.
And Ivis Galarsep. Ivis Galarsep contributed a lot to big soccer and all that stuff. So it's fun hearing the what things were like before social media.
Big soccer was like Wu-Tang, and now they're all.
Yeah.
Now they're all out doing
exactly,
something different.
Doing big things. So, but the like we said, the run that Weston McKennie made to win that ball back, which led to the game-winning goal, again, down a man. I had seen Marco from on Morning Footy today talking about how the Italian media was really praising Weston McKennie. And again, just a couple weeks ago, they were like, you know, that the manager was like, you need to find a new club and all this other stuff. And he just believed in himself because he had a great offer from FC Cincinnati, which he could have taken.
Yeah.
And you know,
I talked to the Cincinnati guys, you know, Chris Albright and Pat Noonan, Kenny Arena. I was actually just there because the U.S. were training at their facility.
Yeah.
They really wanted the guy. And, you know, the most important part of this discussion for me, obviously Juventus, great, like incredible result, like in isolation, amazing performance in a big moment in a campaign for the Champions League and obviously in Serie A. But for Weston McKennie, and I know Weston, I've interacted with him a bunch. You know, I won't say we're friends, but we're definitely friendly. And anytime I get a chance, love to chat with him. Incredible character. And now I'm talking about off the field, just charismatic, like funny, smart, compassionate, does nonprofit work. And listen, I don't know the facts of the off the field issues and I don't know the criticism or the validity of all of that stuff. I do know he's done himself no favors by, in moments, making it easy for people to believe there's something of substance behind that. But for me, the best thing he can do is what he's doing, is just continue to prove you are a person of integrity. You are an incredibly talented player, which you would think he doesn't have to prove anymore, but he will continue to prove, you know, scored a goal in the league during the week. You know, he is essential for Pochettino to go and succeed. And character now from off the field, which I know he is a good character, person of integrity, being demonstrated on the field together with all the other qualities of his game, I think make him the type of player that becomes a big, big star for the U.S. and will be known as one of the best players we've ever had.
I agree. I mean, you know, he's recently just did like a, what's that commercial that's airing with him and Matt Turner and Matt Turner's mom?
Oh, I haven't seen that.
There's like a, you know, a sort of soccer mom commercial where she's driving Matt Turner and Weston in the car. And they just like look like just some wholesome kids. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like
those are two of the nicest guys on that team.
Totally. Too. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And yeah, Matt Turner is, I live in Park Ridge, New Jersey, which is where Matt Turner is from. Yeah.
For Weston, I mean, this is it. Just shut everyone up by performing how you are performing right now.
Yeah. It's also weird to like think of somebody who's like a big Harry Potter nerd and is also like like, I don't know.
Those two things never come together.
Really met that type of person.
That convention is like two people.
Just, oh, I love Harry Potter, and I'm also a bully.
Yeah, yeah. And why are you here?
I don't know. What did that got me? Anyway, next up, I wanted to talk about Aston Villa against Bayern Munich because Aston Villa winning this game, a goal from John Duran, the only goal in the game, but Bayern losing this game. I don't even know what to praise more or what to focus on more. Aston Villa winning this game or Bayern Munich losing this game. I mean, we haven't talked too much about Bayern this season because you know, because
they always win.
Because they always win. And last year was like just odd that the fact that they just did not win. Yeah. They didn't win any trophies at all. But Vincent Kompany now managing the side, but they hadn't lost the game until this one. Mm-hmm. So it feels like, oh, it's back to winning ways, back to the way, you know, Bayern does things. But going to Aston Villa, and I don't know if it's necessarily an underestimation or whatever, but how much of a statement is it that Bayern lost, and how much of a statement is it that Aston Villa won?
I go back to this. You know, the Arsenal one was nepotism, full and unadulterated nepotism. Right. I was always going to go and praise Arsenal, and I want to talk about PSG. This one is really about the arc of Aston Villa. Right. We can think of so many teams over the years that have somehow snuck into the party, right?
Sure.
Call it, you know, Europa League, Champions League, wherever they ended up, and they got there and weren't dressed right, you know, and like very quickly were like, I'm not supposed to be here. Villa absolutely is supposed to be there. And, you know, I've interacted a few times with Wes Edens, the owner, and he's come down to actually no one home. And what's great is I feel like the stereotype of American owner is like, what's the team named again? Like, hey, Jeff, I own this team. Tell Jeff this team that we bought.
You work for my club?
Yeah. And it's like, it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, this has been a very important product and a very thoughtful project to that ownership group. And you can watch over time how they've built the right to what they're doing right now. And they're backing it up, right? Because you can win a game here and there, but they're backing it up in the Premier League. They are a top four English club right now.
I agree. And watching, you know, I'm an Everton fan, so watching some former Everton player.
How's that going for you?
And Amadou. I mean, look, we finally won a game.
Being
an Everton and as someone. You also, you know, I've worked a couple of the Premier League fan fests and stuff like that. Yeah. And that experience as an Everton fan, you get to, it's like a weird, what's the word? Like not a convention.
Support group.
It's we all get together to finally, at least once a year to support ourselves. Yeah. How are you doing emotionally? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Just have a cry circle.
So it's always nice to do that. But like watching some former Everton players go there, there's like two things. Amadou Onana, Lucas Digne has also done really well at Villa. But it really just shows that the sale of Jack Grealish, I just feel like has been used so perfectly. I mean, yeah. they've made some really, really great decisions as far as the players that they brought on.
Yeah, and I remember, what year did they come up? That was like 7 years ago or 6 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 20. Yeah.
We'll get in a second, but I remember, and I was at NBC and where you were on the coverage, and I remember, I want to say it was at Spurs, new stadium, and we got a tour of Tottenham's new stadium, and I want to say Villa, they played Villa that day, and I watched Jack Grealish in the championship. And I thought for sure he was going to jump to a club at that point. Mm-hmm. And he didn't. And what was interesting is that season for Villa, he played really deep. He almost played as like a six, but really an eight that had to sit because they played very conservative, played on the counter a lot. And I marveled at his discipline and willingness to do something that clearly when you have hair like that is not fun.
It's only people with good hair can really spot.
Yeah. hair walks.
I know his desires. I know his aspirations. Yeah.
Any hair that goes past your ears doesn't want to sit in the defensive end of the field.
Exactly.
And so I remember when they sold him, I was a bit worried. Because there's just there's eight clubs we could think of that sold, you know, what is it like, sell Elvis and buy the Beatles? You know, they sold Elvis and bought like the band that we would put together, you know, if me, you, and Alexis. Yeah. So just something you don't want to listen to, sure. And so that's probably one of the biggest mistakes you see with clubs over time is when they make that huge purchase and part with a huge piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. What they bring in, it's just not, I mean, Chelsea's kind of fallen into that a little bit. Sure. And it's like, man, did they do well with replacing Jack Grealish.
Without a doubt, because it sort of changed the entire perception of the club. And, you know, you see Tom Hanks at the games and he loves
Tommy.
Tommy Hanks just loves. He's like, why did you pick Aston Villa? I don't know. Aston Villa just sounded cool. I'm like, all right, better reason than most. I get it. But it's a big win. I mean, when you look at the Bayern squad, though, you just feel like, oh, they, you know, having Harry Kane there, it's like, it's for moments like this, especially when Harry Kane is playing against Premier League competition. It's like, this is why we brought you here to sort of just like give us these big chances and big opportunities. Another player I really, really love that was transferred from Crystal Palace, Michael Olise. Another player that, you know, similar to how we were talking about Odegaard, there's a certain swag, the hair again. Hair. I mean, you can't even be on Crystal Palace. You don't got good hair, dude. We all know the rules.
Prerequisite.
Okay.
You just popped up the ratings a second ago. Obviously, don't read too much into those ratings, but like Gnabry and these players, if on paper, right, or maybe just pull up the FIFA, you know, EA Sports ratings.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you, it's the other way around. It's like, that's a crazy attacking four for Bayern. And Villa, you know, it's, the irony is Jack Grealish would love to play in this version.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, 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 without a doubt. So a shock, I think. I mean, obviously, given the way the Champions League sort of table pans out, like it's not.
How's Harry Kane? I've been watching. How's Harry Kane doing in the league? I haven't been following Bayern closely.
He's doing pretty well.
Yeah, because like this guy just,
He has how many goals? Five goals, four assists in five starts.
That's,
I mean, he's
crazy.
They're crushing in Bundesliga.
And we'll get to Pochettino later, but like Pochettino, gets to Spurs, and there's this kid, right? Like he's training with the reserves, mm-hmm. barely getting into the team. Everyone's like, don't put Harry in. I can't tell you. We would have these debates on the set all the time with Earl and Musto, and you know, we'd always be like, you know, has he hit the ceiling? And we had that debate like eight times as he just kept, you know, just blasting through
literally
the ceiling and getting better
in
and better.
Space. So you're like, oh, has he reached this?
Can he get higher than this? Yeah.
I think he's.
Yeah. There's no gravity anymore. Incredible. Dude.
Love it. The other just notable results that we just mentioned real quick is obviously Borussia Dortmund beating Celtic 7-1, which is unbelievable.
I didn't watch that one. I watched the goals back, which took a long time.
Like, man, I mean, you've been here all day. Adeyemi gets a hat trick. But the funniest moment to me after that game was Peter Schmeichel.
He's really going for it.
Peter Schmeichel was working the game for CBS, and he was at the stadium.
He was doing sideline.
So, and he did the post match interviews with the players, and so his son Kasper Schmeichel is the goalkeeper for Celtic.
I know that.
And so he told Adeyemi, he's like, I'm never gonna forgive you what you did to my son.
That's great though. That's good TV.
Great moment. So you love to see that. But yeah, kind of just crazy. I understand it's a Scottish club or whatever, but this is unbelievable. Like to give up seven, it's like something's like wrong. Something happened in this game where they like gave up to some degree. Like it's hard to explain.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's like you're in those games where it hits four and you're like, I'm not in one. I'm not in one of those, am I? And
right, right.
And then it just gets away from you.
Unreal. Then the other one was Lille beating Real Madrid. They won 1-0 from a penalty from Jonathan David.
Yeah.
And it was
I like Jonathan David, by the way.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about him a little bit. But the handball, it was a handball from Camavinga off of a free kick. It was a pretty much clear handball. But similar to like the Bayern situation, but even probably it's much more notable here. Real Madrid, with the roster that they have, there's just almost no excuse to not even be able to find the goal. But credit to Lille for holding on, because they had to do an unbelievable amount of defending in this game.
Yeah, listen, I'm not going to come in here and give the soundbite that goes around and just proves this guy has no idea what he's talking about. But sure, I'm gonna offer something that will be debated at some point, which is Mbappe to Real Madrid. Like, what was that? Was that the right move for Real Madrid? Like, is that going to, like, I would love to know if Ancelotti, if like, because listen, we all know Florentino Perez is like, yeah, it's like the version of a spouse that comes home with a pet. It's like, we got a dog. It's like, I don't want to.
We should have discussed this, right?
Yeah, it's like, don't you, we gotta live with this now. So it's like, it sounds like it's an easy thing to go, like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. But this happened way back in the day with Beckham, and you know, that era was like, how does this all fit together? And it's just, I don't know. It'd be really interesting to see if the top player in the world, most would say, but definitely top three players in the world right now, like if that was the right move for Real Madrid, is that going to work?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because I like sort of having that conversation of like, this is clearly a great player. Does he make our team better? You know what I mean? Sometimes there are players that hold on to the ball too much, take up too much or maybe want a little bit more, not even necessarily out of an ego kind of a thing, but there's just, if the chemistry is not there, and I'm not arguing that Mbappe is that, because if I'm the president of Real Madrid, I'm taking Mbappe 100 out of 100 times.
Yeah, there's also a calculus that we're not considering.
Exactly,
which
yeah,
is
yeah.
Like, this, we saw the Beckham documentary. It was like, he hasn't stepped on the field yet. He's like, yep, made us $500 million. And it's like, oh, yeah, so that's like, probably a good call.
Nobody is saying no, but again, I guess I'm
thinking tactics, chemistry.
Yeah, like, because it's always,
no doubt Mbappe is one of the best players in the world. And there is not a team in the world that wouldn't want to throw their hat in and go, I'd love to get a chance at this.
Exactly.
It's just Real Madrid is the biggest football club on the planet. I mean, everyone would love to debate whatever. It's like, you know, when the greatest players leave your club, and they always do for only one team.
Totally.
That is the biggest football club on the planet. And it's like, man, is this going to
work? Carlo Ancelotti was the Everton manager and left Everton to go manage a really small club out in Madrid. And I don't know, at the time,
it's
I'm like,
it's not a no-brainer.
At the time, I'm like, Carlo, do you think you might be making a mistake? You know what I mean? You should stay.
The phone's like off the hook, like in his office. He left so quickly.
You know? But yeah, I mean, look, it's the same, the kind of the conversation of before he got there was like, You know, Mbappe has always said he prefers to play on the left wing. And Vinicius Jr. is there, and you know, they can't both play the same exact position. And he'll do the like, oh, okay, I'll play wherever I need to play. But there's a when Mbappe, even when he was at PSG playing at the nine, he's not the same Mbappe. There's just a different game. It is the way, you know, it's like asking, you know, if you ask Giroud to play on the left, like his skill set is so perfect for that position, and Mbappe doesn't necessarily have that skill set for that position, even though he's incredible, but there's just certain little nuances to his game that don't suit a striker.
It always makes me think of, and we mentioned him earlier, Thierry Henry. Thierry told me this amazing story in London one time, hanging out with him at his place, and he told me a story, and he's told it several times, about when he was at Barcelona, and Pep dragged him in a Champions League game at halftime. And, you know, Thierry, I think he was playing off on the left and wasn't getting involved. And Thierry did what Thierry did during his whole career and at Arsenal worked incredibly, is I'll go find the game. Because people forget what a great passer Thierry Henry was. Sure. You know, he would lead and assist a lot of those seasons when he was scoring 20, 30 goals. So he would go find the game. And that game, he went to try to find it and he actually scored. And at halftime, Pep drags him. And go look it up. The story's been told like 80 times. And basically he's like, I don't care who you are. You have to stay. My whole system is not about people. It's about positions and awareness and sequences. And if you break that, then we can't win the way we need to win. And Thierry, like, humbly was like, ooh, man, that's the first time in my career I've faced that. So it just brings it to this conversation. There's only one player ever, and Thierry said it was the only player that was given was not given that same treatment, and it was Messi.
Yeah,
Messi was the only one where it was like, every one of you stay right here. And they're like, what about, like, don't you forget about him?
Don't you talk?
Don't even look at him.
Don't you talk to my golden goose?
Don't even use his name. And so Messi got to do whatever he wanted, and in an era where that used to be the thing, Valderrama, you know, Diego Maradona, like you, the 10 used to, and I love that stuff, and that's why I'd be terrible today. You got to float around, so it's like, man, Mbappe. Like, he is going to do what he wants to do. And then Vinny's going to have to figure out what he's going to do. And Ancelotti, I don't think that really jives with how he plays. So
I think they need a little bit of time, because even in La Liga, they're still kind of figuring things out. They're not the top team at the moment.
By the way, shout out to Mallorca, Stu Holden, Steve Nash.
You're an investor.
I was sold out. Needed some scratch.
You got to build no one home and everything. All right. Exactly. All right. We'll talk some USMNT next, because obviously the Pochettino and the roster coming out. So we'll see what Kyle has to think about it. All right, let's move on. All right. USMNT, we got two friendlies coming up. One, Mexico and Panama, right? Yeah. Or Panama, Mexico. I forgot the order, but
Panama first. And also,
Panama, okay. And you call it? Yeah, obviously you call
it. I gotta get it right.
Okay, yeah.
Hopefully, I get it right.
Show up to the wrong
city.
I'll
be in Guadalajara. I'll be in like.
Oh, my
bad.
Where
is everyone?
but we have to talk about the roster. The roster just came out the other day. And the big name the big surprise, I think, to a lot of people were in goalkeepers. Zach Steffen making a return, the Colorado Rapids goalkeeper, is back after a couple of years. It's already been three years.
Yeah, we've spent a ton of time on it, but that's that, like, the route back into the U.S. could be through MLS. That's happened several times over the years.
Sure. I mean,
Eddie Johnson went to Fulham. It's not a good situation. Comes back to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I probably got like 50 caps after that. Something crazy.
Shout out
to MLS.
Yeah. We have to. I mean, we need more time, because there's a lot of like older USMNT guys. Eddie Johnson is like, we met him in Orlando, I think, at MLS All Star a couple years ago, and watching him and watching what he's done with his like academy.
Oh yeah,
and he's like, seems like he's like building these machines of unbelievable footballers. But
he's just making highlight like highlight making children that are going to be great players. It's remarkable what he's doing.
He's someone who has a lot of opinions on you know that development and how he came up as a player and stuff like that. So, but yes, so Zach Steffen coming back.
Fossey's really cool one. We got to chat with him. Been out of the team for, I think he said like 5 years or something like that.
Had
an incredible, even though a terrible game for the U.S. The last match against New Zealand, he was outstanding.
Yeah, I think after that game against New Zealand, I think that Alexis and I were just like, yo, Fossey's like been, you know, he's pretty good. It was just like very, very impressive. The inclusion of Austin Trusty, who was playing at Sheffield last season, and now he's playing at Celtic. Sheffield, he had gotten relegated. I think that's an interesting inclusion. Not to suggest that he's like a bad player or anything like that, but definitely when you think about, maybe this is a question I can ask you.
Who else are you going to ask?
When players play, when defenders especially play on bad, quote unquote, bad teams where they have to defend a lot, even if they give up a lot of goals, is that an impressive, like, is that a player you want to see? Because it's like a goalkeeper that plays on a bad team, like that has to face a lot of shots. Is it similar with defenders as well? You're like, oh, let me give this guy a shot because he's like always
like Rocky. It's like, man, he's taking a lot of punches. Like, yeah, this guy's tough.
Does that develop a player? You know,
I don't think they obviously don't care about the stats of how many goals are being given up by any team. Mm-hmm. Really what they're looking at is, and a lot of this stuff is very scientific, you know, whether it's Y-Scout, but they have their own proprietary systems that just tell them, like, how often is this person getting on the ball? Where, like, what is the success of their passing? Or how many duels are they winning? So, like, there's really just a kind of a scrape data-wise within a pool of players that are being considered that then invite objective analysis from scouts and obviously talking through the network of people that are watching them and your relationships, where it's like, if it's a the trouble is if it's a player that's in a different system, that's where you got to get, and that's happening with a few of our players, is that they're just playing not only a different role for their national team, they're playing in a different system. Some of them are in back threes or back, you know, call them back fives based on how often they've been defending. And so I think that's going to be a challenge for Pochettino, where really you're just looking at the qualities, and a team that has to defend a lot, you see a lot of how they are in one-on-one duels. But Pochettino is going to want to see a wide body of work that demonstrates what he wants to get out of right backs, center backs, and so on and so forth.
And that's kind of my next question about Pochettino. I mean, what is, Alexis and I have talked about it a bunch, but what impact can he have? How quickly can he impose his philosophy? Like, are we going to see it in these first two matches? Will it take a couple windows? Where's your kind of barometer for where you want to see improvement?
So let's just be clear about a few things that make it really hard to handicap this. One is, and this is a fun little note, that no foreign coach has ever won a World Cup.
Right.
So, I think it's only 8 teams that have won the World Cup. They've always won with a coach from that country. Now, it's a different era. It's a different world. But that's just an interesting piece of information. The other is, obviously, he's never been a national team coach. So, typically how Pochettino goes about his work is getting an incredible amount of time. And sometimes he's taken over teams midseason. But get an incredible amount of time installing a mentality, a culture, and a system through basically, a boot camp, right? You get to be in preseason and no one's watching, no one gets to see as you spend these minutes crafting the type of squad you want and really understanding what you can get out of them. He not only does he not have that luxury being a national team coach, he doesn't really have any of that time because it's only probably 20 something games that he's going to be given before 2026 is here. And the hard part about his job is none of those games outside of the cups, right? Those cups matter. None of those games matter. They're not qualifiers. So mm-hmm. like without qualifiers, it's so hard to create the type of environment that's about stakes and, you know, the carrot and the stick, right? And Pochettino will make an impact just like Jesse Marsh has with that Canada team.
Yeah.
Now, Jesse Marsh had a crazy long time period with that team before his first few games and through those tournaments. But it's going to be so hard because he can't use the same tactics that he uses at the club level to like leave someone out to prove a point where it's like, yeah, man, this is a cup, you know, yeah, or yeah, like you only have four more games. So you're going to see the intensity of the group go up tremendously. I mean, the intensity of the group in terms of ground cover, duels won, it was embarrassing. And the players have talked about that. Christian Pulisic, and I can't remember exactly what he said. I feel like we've got to pull it up, or at least the script. Mm-hmm. He gave an interview that we were all, Bees and I, were driving back to the hotel after the last game against New Zealand. And he said something along the lines of, like, I hope Pochettino can come in here and create a culture of people. And I'm getting it wrong, yeah, so we should get the right
words. We
talked
about this, though, yeah.
We were stunned that the expectation is for Pochettino to come in and right away install the requisite, I mean, absolute minimal level of competitive spirit and commitment to perform that was a given back when we won the shirt. And this isn't our era against their era. Like, I'm just not that type of person. This era, crazy talented players, love watching so many of them play. Like, obviously, as a fan, root for their success. But there's a word, and many people have tiptoed around it, is this team has become soft. The idea that you need to be motivated to meet the minimum level of effort and competitive spirit to win an international game. I mean, New Zealand, again, Kiwi right. friends, love you guys. But it's like the idea that is the job of the manager is worrying that that's one expectation out of the gate. It's like, no. That's on the players. That's a cultural problem.
Yeah.
Y'all better figure that thing out yourselves, because the only way Pochettino can influence that in a very big way with the time he's given is leaving players out of the team.
Okay.
And it's like all of a sudden, like Musa, for instance, love him. I think he's an incredible player. The last two games for the U.S. were probably the worst he's played in his entire time. Now, I want him on that 2026 World Cup team. We need him on that 2026 World Cup team. And I know he's not the type of player where I'm sure that really hurt him. I'm sure he watched the tape. He's thinking about how he can come back and be better. But if you do that consistently, like Pochettino's, I mean, you're gone. He's going to get rid of you. And that's the only thing. Look at what Emma Hayes has done. And Emma Hayes and Pochettino are very good friends. Mm-hmm. Emma Hayes got rid of some people that raised some eyebrows, but like Pochettino needs a chemistry, a culture, and a group that he knows what to expect out of them, and he knows how to inspire and position them to then go be them to go win games because they're the players. And it might mean, you know, like a player like Gio Reyna, who I love. Like, I hope nothing more. Gio Reyna is probably my favorite player to watch. I think he could be one of the best players we've ever produced. But if he can't stay healthy, which sucks, you know, I mean, that might not be his fault. I don't know why these muscle injuries uh-huh. keep happening. But if he can't stay healthy, Pochettino's not going to count on him. He's not from a world in which you can carry a player that you can't count on for five games in a tournament. And
totally.
So,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Reyna specifically, like I remember being at the World Cup qualifier at the Azteca with the 0-0 game, but where he made that run and cut through, you know, like seven defenders. And you just see the quality and he's clearly a player that you just hope for the best. And that's kind of my general feeling with the introduction of Pochettino, because I fall for U.S. soccer's the introductions and the videos they make and everything. I'm like,
you get hyped.
We're going to win the whole damn thing. Thank you, Mauricio.
You got a Pochettino back tattoo already.
I fall for it. And there's something to, even in his introductory press conference, there's a like, I don't know, a certain level of, he doesn't come off as an aggressive person, or I'm sure he gets intense when necessary. He wouldn't be as successful as he is. But there's a paternal sort of, like, the way he sort of carries himself with the media, yeah, that makes me, he just, whatever this means, it just, I'm like, I feel like this guy knows what he's doing. That's, yeah, it. I don't know. Yeah, he, yeah, might not be, but I feel like he does.
Yeah. 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 Like a mechanic. It's like, yeah, you got to change the whole engine. You're like, you know about that?
The way he said it.
But you know, it's a good observation, because fortunately, I've been able to spend time with him off the field and go watch training, mm-hmm, at Spurs when I was working for NBC. Paternal is the right word. That's the special gift that Bruce Arena had that I enjoyed when I was playing for the national team. That's the gift that Sir Alex Ferguson, sure, has. Name drop.
And yeah, also,
partner and no one home.
Also the homies.
Yeah. It's just to scan and understand a human, care about them on and off the field, and understand their motivators. I mean, Pochettino has that gift. And he's coming in with Matt Crocker, who he's worked, they overlapped a little bit at Southampton. There's also ideas that are already installed and a part of the philosophy of this transition, this modern era, that Pochettino, I think, will like, that some of that infrastructure is there. But, you know, for Pochettino, he's, this is the biggest challenge, and he likes the challenge. That's one of the reasons he took the job, just like Emma Hayes. Like, I'm not taking over, like when he took over PSG, you know, you're not taking over someone that's supposed to win and is going to win. You know, like, you're taking over at an inflection point where this is a very talented young group that needs a leader to create leaders.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what we need Pochettino to do. Is there are no leaders within this group. You know, Tim Ream is one, and Christian Pulisic is one. Tim Ream may not be there in 2026, but the way he's playing, he would be.
Sure.
Christian Pulisic is not the leader, just like Clint Dempsey wasn't the leader that was vocal, that drives it, that does, you know, it's like Landon wasn't that either. Christian Pulisic is, watch, I will do this. I will bring us into, yeah, moments we need. I will get us through this game. Christian started to show a little more leadership and being vocal, but that's not what we need. Someone to show up that's like a, you know, that's like a Pablo Mascherini or you know, like a Steve Cherundolo or a Tim Howe, like someone that's just going to be crazy vocal. Bocanegra was that a lot. Yeah, yeah, it's like, yeah, dude, Oguchi Onyewu was that at times as a quiet leader. But it's like this team, it's almost like they just get along too well. They're just so nice to each other.
It's an interesting aspect. I wonder, you know, I mean, I think it goes to kind of like, you know, is it a different era now where maybe older people don't exactly understand what the kind of the players are like, or like their demeanor? But there is I don't know. I mean, there's a certain appreciation. It's almost like the gentle parenting where sometimes I've been seeing this a lot where like, younger parents who leave their kids with their parents, their grandparents, they'll be like, why don't you treat them like you treated me? You,
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You were a maniac with me. Yeah. Why are you so kind all of a sudden?
And you gotta, like, here's the hard part is, and it's pretty provocative now about environments, but you have to remember, like, the environment of a professional athlete, it needs the type of things that cannot happen anywhere else. Like, you can't be like, you know, a barista at Starbucks or working at like Deloitte & Touche and expect the type of environment. Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, we punch each other in the face and take showers with each other afterwards. So like, of we have bags of urine thrown at us at work. It's, sure, like, so it's like the world that needs to be created is one that there's enough fear of others and enough fear of being left out that is always an unsaid motivator around, yeah, the group. And I feel like there's not enough fear within the culture of this team. It's like everyone thinks, and by the way, for a while, everyone knew they were going to be in the starting 11 for a long time.
Sure.
And let's just give Berhalter a little, like, Berhalter did a great job with this team. He absolutely did a great job. We could sit here and dissect from that decision in the World Cup, from the comments afterwards, the Reina situation and all of that. So many people made mistakes in that scenario. And the unfortunate part is no one won out of that whole thing.
Right.
And it became incredibly disruptive to an inertia and a momentum that Greg Berhalter created with this young team. Whether you think he should have continued or not is irrelevant. That moment just disrupted so much positive momentum. And I really do think we are further back from where we were at the best part of the Greg Berhalter era. And the good part is pieces are further along. Christian Pulisic is better and further along than he was then, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, these players are emerging. Aiden Morris is starting to show up as someone that could be ready. Like, pieces are getting better, but the unit has gotten worse for sure.
And yeah.
Go watch the performances. I don't need to debate. And if you're going to debate totally. This, like, you're watching a totally different game.
We're just looking
at Pochettino has a big job and he is qualified for it. And I can't wait to see what he does. And I can't wait to see the first version of us in the next two games.
Me too, man. I mean, it's wild to go from, you know, hearing the players talk about when Berhalter got the job again and being like, oh, we want to run through a wall for this guy. He brings the group together, to Pulisic's comments and even Tim Ream's comments about the, you know, Tim Ream was on a podcast, I forgot which one, where he mentioned like, oh, it doesn't necessarily feel like some of these guys are carrying themselves with the pride of wearing the national team shirt that I would like totally. To see.
This thing is the number one thing that we have to be worried about, which is it seemingly on performance meant so much more to all of us in the past to have the opportunity to wear that shirt, what it meant, the responsibility that came with it. And I'll tell you, there were plenty of players in that team when my first national team with the real team,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Like, I'm looking around Joe Max and Ernie and Claudio, who, by the way, I knew some of these guys were so mean to me. Like, I'm an outsider. I sat with the goalies, which is a different conversation that first. But you had to earn your right to belong in that group. And it really hurts to watch the value of wearing that jersey seemingly go down based on the performances that people put forward and get away with, because it never would have been allowed in our era. And so, like, I'm just hopeful. Ream and Pulisic, they all said the right things. I like the honesty.
Yeah,
they're right.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem, is not do we have a goalkeeper or a forward that can score or what formation. It's like, all of a sudden, the U.S. no longer a tough team to play against because we care so much about making people proud when we put that shirt on.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that, but I would like a goalkeeper that's playing a lot of games.
Yeah. and a goalkeeper that's playing a lot of games.
Goalkeeper, just getting a couple minutes here and there. That'd be lovely.
Balogun scored though, like that. Keep scoring, please.
So the two matches on October 12th and October 15th. So they're coming up soon. Like we said, Kyle's going to be on there. They're either on TNT or like HBO Max most of the time, right?
That's not my choice.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. So we shall see.
We'll let you know.
But Kyle will be on the call, so make sure you tune in to both those matches. All right, we got a few more things to cover, so we'll be right back after this. First, before we get into Inter Miami winning the Supporters Shield, I just want to make sure I give a huge shout out to Kyle Martino. Everything he's done the last couple of years has been transformative, I think, to not just soccer in America, but especially in New York City with Street FC, over under, no one home. This is, dude, you're the busiest person in the world.
This is why my hair is gray. Thanks, man. Thanks. And you know what's like super cool? We'll have to find a photo or something. No one home, as you know, and you know, maybe 100 people knew, started out of the basement of my place in Greenpoint.
That's right.
And that was the first kind of idea I had for it as I was testing it. And one of the best nights at No One Home, still to this day, way back when it was called House in my basement, like a maniac, mm-hmm. was when the Cooligans ran a comedy show night there. And
dude,
that was brilliant.
Yeah, one of my favorite things I ever did. That was right, like during the pandemic, where all events had to be outdoors. We did stand up in your backyard. We invited a few comedians that we knew.
That was special, man.
So fun. Yeah,
I love
man.
That.
And we also hosted the thing with 8x8 with Tim Weah No One Home at the, you know, at the event space,
yep.
Which is absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, it is, for some people who may not know, it is essentially like Soho House, but for soccer. aficionados, right?
Yeah. And public too. So like, you know, there's, you can access No One Home without being a member. It's just, there's a member program if you want to, you know, be a part of something.
Totally. Yeah. It is very cool. And it's wild to like, you know, be there and then, you know, just an MLS Cup winner walk in or whatever. Like, it's like a cool, it's just like a, it feels very, especially there's something to being a soccer fan and living in the US that you sometimes, it's hard to find your community. Yeah. and No One Home feels exactly like that.
Well, I mean, listen, and first off, thanks, man, because you guys have brought so much value, been supporters of a lot of stuff that I've done. And like, the number one reason I built No One Home is I just miss being a part of a club. Like, I miss being a part of something.
Sure.
And I also miss having an easy way to identify as a soccer fan, that I don't have to be this type or that type or this thing. I don't have to be an Arsenal fan, or I don't have to be a soccer player. I don't have to be this. And so it's been really dope to see the No One Home community grow. And also at a time that the game is the game we've loved, the game I got made fun of for liking when I was a kid, is the thing everyone's excited about. So to have a place like a clubhouse where we all meet and share stories and ideas and thoughts and friendship and support, and then obviously watch the game when we want, but more so like just be plugged into just a dope community of people. It was wild. It's like, I love being a fan again. That's my favorite part of this stage of my life, is not feeling tethered to the soccer player or whatever, and being able to go to a place and just be another fan at a bar stool. And like, the idea the other day, and I was out of town, that, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson is, you know, at No One Home, and they're scanning during the community shield, and they always do this, like, you know, where's Sir Alex? Like, yeah, he's not in the box watching this big match.
I'm just, and he's like, I'm just writing down Sir Alex Ferguson on the list of potential co-hosts.
Yeah, exactly, perfect. Yeah. I was like,
that I assume we'll never ever do this, but I gotta, you know, he's right under your name. So
yeah, just put a mic between you guys at No One Home. Just be like, sorry, we're recording this, right? So are you cool with that?
So I want to talk about Inter Miami. They won the Supporters Shield yesterday, last night, in a great game against Columbus Crew.
Yeah.
Your former team. Yeah, I mean, they've had a good couple years, obviously, with Wilfred Nancy as head coach. But this was a game where, look, there's obviously the Supporters Shield was at stake, and Columbus still had possibly an opportunity to win it, but we all sort of knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But Inter Miami winning this and still have the potential for the most, if they win their final two matches, they'll have the points record in Major League Soccer. But it led to a couple conversations about the value of the Supporters Shield. I mean, we saw Sasha Kljestan,
my guy, love him.
The homie, right? It's interesting. I have this, like,
he's on our men's league team for the weekends. Team Mazo. Shout out to Team Mazo.
Sasha's.
I only have like one or two appearances on Team Mazo because I'm too slow and old to be any good.
Bro, I remember before you started Street FC, I had one of my fondest memories was going to when you used to post on Twitter like, "Hey, I'm hosting a pickup game."
Yeah, no, well, that's how Street FC started. Totally. Was like, I'm Jimmy Conrad style, like, I'm showing up here.
Yeah, and I went to one. And I thought it was going to be like, oh, this is cool. Kyle Martino's on NBC Premier League. I'm sure like a lot of fans of his will go and we'll have a fun little pickup game. And it's literally me against Aleko Eskandarian, former MLS.
Who's still really good.
Who's still really good. But I remember being on the pitch with you. And there were about two, three times where I had to defend against you. And again, I didn't grow up playing the sport. This was about 8 years ago. And I'm much better than I was then, a person who learned to play soccer as an adult. But I remember being in front of you and realizing, oh shit, this is a professional player. I am so far from what he is. And you're calling yourself old and slow.
And I suck now.
And I'm just like, I'm not even gonna get to the point of Kyle Martino sucks. You know what I mean? I'm not even that close. There's nothing I can do to get to the point where Kyle Martino thinks he sucks.
Oh,
and
my God.
It was just, there's an ability, a vision, and control of the ball where I was like, there's no way I'm touching this ball. I'm not getting it. I'm not getting close. I'm not even making Kyle scared that I might get the ball. It was just so remarkable. And sometimes when people think Oh, why did he miss that shot? My grandmother can. I'm like, buddy, this. You think?
This is the show we need to start. Is like, anytime someone's like, well, I could easily do that. Yeah. It's like immediately they get invited to a world that demonstrates you, idiot.
So, but the supporter shield is a. So Sasha Kleshin was talking about it.
And yeah. I didn't see what he said.
He said that the supporter shield is a trophy that no one ever said. This team got lucky to win the supporters shield, which is why it is the most important trophy in Major League Soccer. He didn't use the word important, but I forgot. I'm just paraphrasing. So he's saying it's more valuable than MLS Cup because nobody wins it accidentally. You can have a hot streak of winning 5-6 games and win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
So it's not as impressive as winning the supporters shield. Now the counter argument might be it isn't a balanced schedule. So the supporter shield is a little bit.
You
can't drink out of it. That's a huge one. That's a huge trait to it being a significant reward. But your thoughts on this supporter shield versus MLS Cup?
So I would say I'm not going to sit on the fence. I will take a position in that I agree with him. But under these terms, I agree. Because it is harder to do. It is harder to be the best team flat out all season. And promotion, relegation, and forget like all the complexity of promotion, relegation, it is the most compelling and merit-based sporting format on the planet. You know, some may argue it's not as interesting as the...
Just playoffs?
The parity that exists and you lose a game, you're done. You know, win and go, lose, go home.
Yeah.
So it's like what it means is just different, right? Because like people, it just depends on what you're qualifying. Like if you're saying this trophy means best team in this league, then that's the Community Shield. And
Supporter Shield.
A Supporter Shield.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the Supporter Shield is the same thing as the Premier League titles, and the Bundesliga.
Yeah,
it's like when teams win leagues, they win it the way that Miami just won the Supporters Shield.
Yeah.
So, like with that logic, and even with how I feel, I agree with Sasha. What you need to get to is like, don't make it about importance. It's like importance that says what? Because it's like. The treble in 99, people will say that Manchester United, and I remember the second year Pep was at Manchester City, I said, this is the greatest English soccer team like we've ever seen. Like this is the greatest English football club ever. Mm-hmm. And got just, as you can imagine,
the 99ers
destroyed.
The 99ers, and I would say, not the U.S. Women's National Team 99ers.
No.
The other 99ers.
And that's the best team. So I would say 75% of the answers were the 99 treble team.
Yeah.
Forgetting that, if Dennis Bergkamp scores a penalty in the FA Cup, Dennis Bergkamp at the end of that game, then Manchester United out of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Right. Also down the stretch, Manchester United barely won the Premier League. Mm-hmm. I think it was Arsenal that year. It was like kind of neck and neck with them. And then we all watched that game. I mean, Bayern Munich absolutely batters. I mean, I've never seen a team more dominated that won a game.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what are you saying? Like that Manchester United team, if it played against the Manchester City team 10 games, they would probably lose, you know, they would win 3 of them.
Sure.
And there wouldn't be a draw. They'd lose 7 of them, right? So it's like the way that Pep's Manchester City dominates and possesses against top 4 teams like they're in the relegation zone,
mm-hmm.
and you know goes and wins, it is dominance. So it's like, I guess you just have to ask, like the shield means Inter Miami is the best team this year. That's the hardest thing to do. If they go on and also win the MLS Cup, it's like, just debate done. But which one has more significance is a different discussion because significance is tied to emotion. Like emotionally, the MLS Cup has more significance.
Sure. And it's why Major League Soccer, that's who they crowned the champion.
Yeah. Like, and I'm you know, honestly, like, I don't mind that. I wish that we had promotion relegation. I think we need promotion relegation.
I agree, yeah.
But like, I'm also an American kid that grew up watching, you know, like the World Series, the World Champions, I was watching the NBA, the finals, the playoffs. Like, the Patriots, I like that stuff
when
too.
When the Patriots got to the Super Bowl against the New York Giants, they needed one more win to have that undefeated season. So they had the best regular season. They didn't lose a game, but they're not the champions of that season. And, you know, it's similar because it's funny watching, MLS season pass. And obviously, Sasha Kljestan and Bradley Wright Phillips.
Love Bradley. Those guys are the best.
They're both great.
They are the best dudes.
But two Red Bull guys that won supporter shield and are like, nah, bro, MLS Cup. Not really that important. Supporter shields were that, but y'all didn't win it.
The only thing I've ever won is the Open Cup. And anyone that will listen, I'm like, this thing is crazy important. Okay. Gotta win Open Cups.
I mean, it's nothing. It's not great. It's, you know, we've talked about this a whole bunch. It's just like the decision from MLS to limit the MLS teams that are participating in Open Cup. It's ridiculous. I mean, we saw Kai Kamara.
It's a long conversation.
Kai Kamara, after LAFC won, he said the same thing. He said, is Don Garber here? You know, because I want to make sure that we don't remove MLS from this because this is like such an important thing.
Let me ask you a question. Will Messi win MVP this season?
Great question, Kyle Martino. I guess you're looking at the rundown like I am.
Did I?
This is another good debate because I'm going to add another question to it just to wrap up. But is him winning MVP, is that a knock on, like, so again, Sasha Kljestan said, if you vote
Sasha has a position on this?
Yes. He said, if you vote for MVP for Lionel Messi, that you are not a serious person. So my man is attacked. I'm a voter, okay? And I have to weigh these decisions.
This is so good. This is like his nanny. This is...
He said, you're not a serious person voting for... because he missed 15 games. And Inter Miami actually accrued more points, that a better points per game ratio without him. And it's like by a 0.1. They technically were a little bit better without him. But it's not by much. Messi's, I believe, on, I think, 17 goals and 15 assists, something along those lines. We'll get the exact numbers.
Those sound like MVP-ish numbers.
Those are MVP-ish numbers.
In a very short amount of games.
In a shorter amount of time. So he's done that in a less amount of time than some of his other competitors. And you would argue Benteke is there. Cucho Hernandez is there. Evander at Portland is there. A potential MVP.
Remind me, do they give out the MVP before the final? No, right?
Right at the beginning of the playoffs, I think, is usually around the time.
Well, so right there is really weird, right? Because it's like every other sport has this crazy debate, but like what tends to be the big point is, you know, they didn't win their team the title. Right, that ends up having like a tremendous amount of weight.
Yeah.
And so I find that that's fascinating because it's like, you know, the Heisman, is the Heisman given out before like they pick the national champion? It is. Yeah. So now we're down a rabbit hole. What are we doing? You can't give the, so it's really just regular season.
It is regular season. Yeah.
So, I mean, and they don't count playoffs, which is wild. Cause like that really is the moment that you figure out like, yep, that guy's the MVP. Holy cow.
I can understand the point against, you know, of not voting for Messi because other players have contributed similar numbers and have done it throughout the season. Either weren't injured or they weren't away on international duty or whatever. But as a voter, and I've been voting...
As a registered voter.
Everybody, November 5th, everybody do the right thing. This country's falling apart.
Links in the bio.
Okay. But the... what was the point I was going to make? I was thinking of the joke. what was I saying?
Was it a point or a joke?
As a voter.
Here it is. We can edit that out.
As a voter, to when I see... Lionel Messi on the ballot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, I think.
Are you worried like the floor is going to open up? Like if you don't, you know how chin, you're going
to
fall into a.
For me to ever, to be even be in the position where my vote has this level of significance and I am saying, no, Lionel Messi didn't do enough for me to tell me he is the most valuable player. And he has transformed this entire league. Apple's quite happy that he's there.
Oh, you're in a most valuable person. You're in a most valuable person category now.
There is that, but even with everything that he's done on the pitch, it is he scores two goals yesterday.
Yeah,
he is just so impactful. And I sometimes make the complaint that I think Inter Miami has done this while playing with 10 men. Right. When they defend, we see what Lionel Messi does. It's just essentially nothing.
I love this argument. This guy is an MVP because he doesn't even defend and his team have to make up for that.
But I had seen who was this about? I just mentioned this the other day, but it was about Pep telling to Sergio Aguero. Sergio Aguero was on his on Twitch and he was saying that when Pep got there, he told him, look, I don't need you to defend. I don't need you to do all these things. But he said, all I need you to do is win me games. That's it.
That's nice.
In those positions when you need to be the difference, that's what I need you to do. And that's clearly what Messi is
doing. So if the vote's tomorrow, who are you voting for?
If the vote's tomorrow, if the vote's tomorrow,
come on.
Given seeing the photos of Messi lifting the supporter shield.
if the vote's tomorrow.
Oh, I love it. Look at this.
Who are you going for? Who are you going for if the vote's tomorrow?
This was a gift from a fan. I'm probably voting for Lionel Messi.
Yay! What is this? Oh, it's a beer.
It's a beer. I have some. I don't know which beer it is. I actually haven't
He's voting Messi. Have the beer. Congratulations, Messi. That was the one vote that got you over the edge.
I might, some people might be critical of that, but man, it's That's almost the impact that he's just had. If forget all the ticket sales and all this other stuff, the impact that he's had on the pitch, I think, is remarkable. And yes, he missed a lot of games, so I understand the debate there. But even still, the level of impact in the minimum amount of games that he's had is unreal to me.
Yeah, I haven't watched enough to have a strong opinion, so it's yours that we're going to go with. You can put my name next to your vote. Kyle's with me.
Yeah, yeah. So it's Sir Alex Ferguson also agrees with me, he's in.
Here's one thing, and really a shout out, but another person of the year discussion. I was there when Beckham came to the Galaxy.
Sure.
Right?
Try wearing this.
That was one of the craziest. I mean, there's an Emmy Award winning documentary that gets into it. And congratulations, David and Fisher, for winning the Emmy on that one.
You're in it too?
Yeah. So they've still won an Emmy.
You didn't even hinder
even with putting me in it. Now, David, I mean, it's like, dude, anything that you say about Messi and his impact on Miami, on the game in this country. And I don't think you can be hyperbolic enough to talk about it. Like, I'm telling you, elementary school cafeterias look different. Sure. It's like this thing is as widespread as a pop culture thing has ever happened in this country. And really, who's behind it is Beckham.
Beckham.
Like, what's nuts, dude. Is like, this guy comes to L.A., and let's give Thierry credit too. Let's start with Thierry. Like that was big moment. Cause even with the guys in the path, both Armateus and Donadoni, I mean, legends, loved these guys. I mean, zero impact. Cause it was just having a moment without an amplification instrument, no social media. It wasn't just everywhere. Beckham comes and it's everywhere overnight. We played right down the road at Giant Stadium, now MetLife Stadium. Mm-hmm. It had 68,000 people in it. And like that happened overnight. And that stayed. Like the world changed because he came. And everyone's like, oh my God, they're going to give this guy a team. And I can't believe this. This is like, it's like Tim Leiwicki, wherever you are, right? These businessmen and women that put this deal together. It's like when you really do the research in 2032, when, like pickleball, and it's going to be gone by then, hopefully, soccer is just taken over the landscape, right? Just everywhere you walk, some kid or some adult kicking a ball on concrete. Soccer looks like basketball in this country, right? you'll be able to find a few people, and David Beckham is, and the people that got him here, and it's only a handful of people. It's like, I think that's probably the inflection point that forever changed the trajectory of soccer in this country. And like, holy
yeah,
that
yeah.
is pretty cool.
Okay. I mean, so yeah, look, valid argument for Messi as MVP.
I don't even know how that even connects to Messi winning MVP.
Okay. But yeah, dude. Well, Kyle, this has been absolutely remarkable. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, I love you,
me.
Dude.
This
I was pumped the beer.
Super cool.
Alexis is enjoying himself on his vacation.
He's posted pictures on his Instagram stories about tiny British sandwiches. He's like, they're too small out here. Oh, yeah. He said, I ordered a large.
They have no idea what's coming his way.
you don't get the kind of calories you do in America. He's not aware, so he's going to learn real quick.
He's like raiding pizza shops, and they're like, dude, we don't even do pizza.
So, Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. Hey, everybody, man. Obviously, go follow Kyle on Instagram. For everything going on, follow at no one home 141. That's a picture of us hanging out there, but go no one home street FC over under. Again, like, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say, like, you know, Kyle Martino is contributing everything he can to American soccer and change the landscape of this sport. And thanks, even man. In the time from when we met you to from when we started this show, it's just awesome to see all the other things
thanks,
that you're
man.
Doing, man. So
thanks.
It's doing great.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Everybody, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Subscribe on YouTube. And Alexis will be back next week. And that's about it.
I didn't get the job.
I mean, it's great audition, but I mean, you know, Alexis wins the hair competition. Cheers, everybody. Peace.